Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for January the 3rd in the year of our Lord, 2017. This is our 2 at 2, and our goal always, steady as a rock. That is to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. We reject revolution, but we stand for restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth using the supreme law of the land and the checks and balances that made America great. We could do it again if we turned to our God and work hard and become a good, honest, moral people. Once again, focused on unification rather than division. Folks, it's hard work, but we trust can get it done. Our goal is to restore the republic, and we claim this nation shall endure. We got one of the most positive attitudes, hope for America, than any other talk show out there. More so, at least. The United States is no stranger to tampering in the elections of other countries, but Barack said that America couldn't be tampered with. Obama said that it was nearly impossible to rig an election. He said that with the joint press conference with Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi. But now he's punishing Russia for doing exactly what he claimed couldn't be done. What's up with that? Wow, leaked audio now. John Kerry speaking out. Barack and Clinton literally wanted ISIS to grow. It's beyond imagination what's going on in the world today. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. One of the big keys of Donald Trump is to bring jobs back, is to create an environment of less regulation, of freedom, of competition, of supply and demand, in such a way as to literally make America great again. Wow, do we support that effort. Our prayers are with the Donald, and our hope is not in man, but in us doing our very best as a people, in the American ideal, and in our efforts to strive to achieve that ideal. Without further ado, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org, is with us. Happy New Year, and welcome back, my friend.
Happy New Year to you, Sam.
Now, I want to talk about this point that I made here with regards to bringing jobs back, creating an environment of competition and supply and demand and good things happening. Barack wants to put some tariffs at the borders on goods if necessary. I support that completely. It is a constitutional tax, not to put it on the backs of the American people, but to say...
You said Barack wants to. You mean Trump,
no,
right?
Barack wants to do this, doesn't he, Kurt?
Oh, put tariffs at the borders.
Yeah, doesn't Barack want to?
Oh, I hadn't heard him talk much about it.
He's never talked about it. Doesn't he stand for the opposite, Kurt?
Yeah, it's called free trade.
Okay, so the Donald wants to do that. Barack doesn't. I'm just highlighting the contrast between the two, and in the most 180 degree terms that I possibly can. Barack wants no part of the constitutional way to support the proper limited role of government. Donald does. So we see an incredible 180-degree seat change in how this would go down. Will we see that in a reality for the American people when it comes to work, Patrick Simmons?
Well, you know, I think what we're focusing on, obviously, is Right to Work, and Right to Work has a great track record of job creation. Just to give you some kind of statistics, you know, people talk about manufacturing. Oh, manufacturing jobs are gone. They're not coming back. This is what we hear a lot. This is what, you know, a lot of people who oppose Donald Trump said. But if you look at right-to-work states, in the last 5 years, right-to-work states have had manufacturing job growth of double the rest of the country. It's been about 8% the rest of the country, or the forced unionism states, just barely over 4%. So we're talking about 2 to 1 in terms of performance, twice as many jobs, or the rate of growth is twice as fast in right-to-work states. And, you know, it makes sense. This is where businesses want to be. This is where employees want to be. That's been one of the other major trends we've seen over the last 10 years are working Americans moving to right-to-work states because that's where job opportunities are. That's where they're not held back by one-size-fits-all forced unionism contracts to force them to pay a union, maybe for a seniority system that doesn't reward them for being a productive employee, but it just says, well, you know, You get rewarded just because you made another year. And so, you know, people want a dynamic work environment where they can be rewarded for doing a good work, and right to work states is where that's at right now.
You think we're going to see this happen, this change? Barack's got an agenda set so hard against workers in America, against prosperity, against stability, against a level playing field. He's got his agenda so entrenched with so many regulations and so many executive orders and so many violations of the balance of power assertions. Do you think Donald can really unwind this, or is it just a pipe dream?
Well, it's going to take a lot of effort, a lot of focus. I mean, I think there's some stuff there's no question he's going to be able to do relatively easily. But there's a lot of it is very entrenched, and it's going to take years to and years of focused leadership from Donald Trump, but also from, you know, his cabinet secretaries or, you know, for example, in our area, the National Labor Relations Board. I mean, we've seen Obama NLRB overturned a something like two centuries worth of precedent at the National Labor Relations Board, you know, to favor union organizers and big labor at the expense of both small businesses and then also the individual workers. And so, you know, those things cannot be overturned overnight. You've got to have a case come before the board. Then they look, that case is the opportunity to overturn the bad forced unionism, pro-big labor, big government precedents that we saw under the Obama years. And that takes a long time to bring those cases forward, to have them take place. There's a right of appeal. We have, you know, a judicial system in this country. They go to the federal courts. We think, you know, we can win those types of cases, but it's not a quick or easy path at all, and it's going to require the American people also, I think, being vigilant. Just, you know, because you put someone in the White House and you think that they share your values, you know, doesn't mean that things change in Washington just on that basis alone. It takes more than that, and having grassroots people, you know, reminding their elected officials why they were put in office and reminding them that when the next election comes, things can change if they don't follow through on their promises.
Kurt, what do you say? Is the agenda just too difficult for Donald? There's now people saying Donald's going to get weak knees. He won't be able to stay stable. He won't be able to get it done. He's going to capitulate. That's what Newt Gingrich is saying now.
You know, now Newt ought to know about capitulating, but when I look at you know, I guess you could say any individual that I'm aware of, I'm talking about the ones that they put out for us to learn about. You know, at least when you look at those, say, 17 candidates that they put up in the Republicans, there were. Like, for example, Rand Paul would have been my favorite earlier. But, you know, when you look at somebody who may have the, what's the word, chutzpah, or, you know, the courage to go against even those big insiders and have the money to do it, you're going to have a hard time finding anybody that fits that besides Trump. And, you know, it's that Gina Loudon story or article that we went over a while back makes me think of this one again. You know, she as the wife of a former senator and that kind of thing, you know, she knew how that kind of insider thing works. And she saw the difference in Trump. And, you know, so all I can say is... you know, there's some great hope there. It's certainly a lot of work. And when Patrick Simmons says, you know, that these states with this, what I'd call freedom, are the ones where, you know, growth happens and that kind of thing goes on. I mean, That's the beauty of America. I mean, we're supposed to have freedom everywhere, but, you know, we really don't. At least the places where there's a little more freedom, less taxes, less regulation, that kind of stuff. That's where you see these, freedom-like activities, you know, breaking out. People working and making a living and progress going forward. And the other places, you just see backwardness and losing and losses and etc.
But you know what, though? I think that we, the American people, are the deciding factor on how much Donald can and will get done. The question is how do we be involved and what should we do to make sure that our influence is felt in a positive way that is solution-oriented? Patrick Simmons can help us with that in seconds. RightToWork.org on your radio.
Recent studies show that parents who smoke in the home are more likely to have children who smoke.
Yes. In fact, my brother, he's 22 now, he told me and my father that's why he started smoking. One of the reasons why he started smoking is because my dad was around, you know, and they saw my dad smoking. My dad said, okay, I don't want you to smoke. I don't want you to, you know, watch what I'm doing.
Recent studies also show that in homes where parents don't smoke, their children usually don't smoke either.
I am the way I am because my grandparents taught me what not to do. They gave me morals. They gave me belief. They gave me something to believe in. They just taught me well. I love them. I do.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, we're talking to Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org. We're talking about Donald Trump. Does he have the chutzpah, or whatever you want to call it, the guts, the courage, the integrity to really deliver on his promises of putting tariffs at the borders, creating a level playing field, literally bringing jobs back to America? Right to work is one of the key components to getting that done, in my opinion. Absolutely one of the critical ideas. In fact, there's a headline Kurt just sent me. Trump blasts General Motors, Kurt. All right, while Kurt comes back, Trump blasts General Motors, make Chevy Cruze model in the USA, or pay big border tax. CNBC.com. Those are pretty bold statements. It's going to take a real principled, dedicated person to really push to get that done, Patrick Simmons.
Yeah, it's I hadn't seen that. I just in the break I clicked over and I saw that on Drudge Report. I haven't got to read the article yet, but it is interesting. One of the things we've seen in terms of the auto industry is on one hand the sort of the big three, the unionized automakers have really been struggling, and they've been the ones increasingly looking to Mexico and that type of places like that to make cars. In the meantime, you've got foreign companies coming to the United States to right to work states, building cars in increasing numbers. We've of course have the high profile Volkswagen plant in Tennessee, but there's cars made all across Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, and so it's very interesting. I think there's no question cars can be built in this country and can be successful. All you have to do is look at right to work states to prove that that can be done. Companies making business decisions can cite those production lines in the United States and be comfortable knowing they could do so, make a profit, treat their workers correctly, and so that's a model for everyone, for Donald Trump, for GM, for anyone else to look at, is in terms of when it comes to manufacturing and auto production in particular.
Now, but what Donald needs to do is, if he's really going to back up this claim, is if you're going to leave America, you're going to pay a big tax. In addition to that, if we're going to keep people in America and have these companies stay in America, what we've got to do is reject this forced unionism idea, because what they do is they literally manipulate the normal supply and demand of wages, employer versus employee, and they literally tip the scales to where employers cannot fund the wages, the benefits, the outlandish demands of a union that is so powerful, with government special privileges and more in their back pocket. He's got to dismantle that some and allow people to join and leave unions and let the free market work. If he just put tariffs at the borders and does not have a companion reality check on unions, we will lose. Patrick?
Yeah, I certainly think so. And, one of the things that he said very early on in the campaign, before he even clinched the nomination, he came out and he said he's for National Right to Work Act. People focus on right to work states. There's 26 right to work states, and there's three that may add it this year. We think there's a real good chance of both Missouri, Kentucky, and then also New Hampshire becoming 27, 28, and 29. But really, the forced unionism power, states have been given this ability to repeal it, but this all comes from federal law. And so a National Right to Work Act that would repeal the portions of federal law that authorize these forced dues contracts, the forced dues clause that says a union can have a worker fired simply for not paying them money and for no other reason, doesn't matter how great an employee they are, that they can have them fired for that, is something that needs to be done at the federal level. And all the sort of job numbers and the statistical economic advantages that we've talked about for right-to-work states versus non-right-to-work states, we can see that nationwide. If Donald Trump, he said he'll sign it. I think he will if we can get it to his desk. If he pushes for it, I think the House can get it done. The Senate's not going to be difficult, obviously. Democrats can filibuster there, even though Democrat voters, actually a majority of them, support right to work. As we know, union bosses give big, big money. $1.7 billion in the last election cycle for politics and lobbying. That goes overwhelmingly to Democrats and Democrat candidates. And so, there's going to be a difficult lift, I think, in the Senate, but one that would be worth doing because, the right-to-work advantages from just an economic side, and then, of course, from freedom side, it's worth it, even if those other benefits weren't there, are just overwhelming. You know, one of the big things that we look at is, you know, you talk about getting American workers a raise. In right-to-work states right now, if you once you adjust for the cost of living, which is, of course, significant when you look at states, you know, Utah versus California or New York versus Texas. But in right-to-work states, workers earn $2,000 more per year in personal income once you adjust for the cost of living.
And that's a lot of money, because the average worker in America makes, what, around 50 grand? Or the average household income is around 50 grand? That's like 4%.
Yeah, so this is, you know, you know, you want to talk about a way to get money in the pockets of workers, to create jobs, and to make America more competitive without making it a race to the bottom or anything like that. Right to work is a way to do it, because workers, once you adjust for the cost of living, which is the you know, key, obviously, it doesn't matter if you have $10 in your pocket, if it costs $20 for a loaf of bread, you know, you're that's not going to work out. So, you know, yeah, this is a way to do it, and a way to do it in a pro-freedom, you know, restraining government, but a proven track record of job creation and most importantly, freedom of choice for workers, which we know ends up with more money in their pockets.
And one of the most important things there is the free market. People should be able to join unions. We're not anti-union, folks. What we are is anti-government, pulling the lever in the favor of unions against the people, giving the union bosses power to say one thing to their constituents or to their members and do another, and to then force constituents and or members to go along with certain agendas that they may or may not even agree with, and then to make it difficult for them to negotiate on their own individually and or decide that they don't want to carry forth the agenda of the union. We need this free association reality to the mix, and we need to make sure that big companies aren't forced to be, quote, union shops in a way that literally ratchets up wages. Because what you're trying to do is let the government create a level playing field. You're trying to have government ensure that contracts are honored. And really, other than that, the government needs to get out of the way, sit back, and let the free market work. And if you put tariffs on the borders of countries that are hostile to that free market, and you appropriately reward nations who are fair about those markets, in other words, support the level playing field, support the free market, and then you have a recipe for success. If you take the taxes off of the back of the taxpayer, put it as tariffs at the borders, let people freely join or leave unions as they best see fit based on the performance of the union leaders, and then you put tariffs at the borders and take those taxes off the backs of the American people, and then allow people to freely associate, you start to deregulate and create a level playing field. Man, you have created an economic engine that we haven't seen in our whole lifetimes, Patrick. When we come back, can you stay a little longer?
Sure.
Normally, we let you go at the 30 break because we know you're super busy, but I want you to be able to respond to this because I really think that's the recipe for success. And I bring it up now because hopefully Donald's surrogates and others are listening and they can give this information to Donald Trump. And you know what? Carrying this forward and partnering with righttowork.org would be the thing to do, ladies and gentlemen. If you really want solutions, there they are. Liberty Roundtable Live, Patrick Simmons in seconds on your radio.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Driverless automobiles will revolutionize the way Americans travel and many other aspects of the way we live. Slate magazine points out that as technology takes the wheel, road deaths due to driver error will begin to diminish. Difficult, though it may be, to find a downside to a reduction in fatal traffic accidents, the left-leaning cyber publication manages this feat by complaining that this transformative advancement comes with consequences in an unexpected place, organ donation. It's morbid, but the truth is that due to limitations on who can contribute transplants, among the most reliable sources for healthy organs and tissues are the more than 35,000 people killed each year on American roads, continues Slate. Currently, one in five organ donations comes from the victim of a vehicular accident. That's why departments of motor vehicles ask drivers whether they want to be donors. The most ethical solution to the chronic shortage of transplant-suitable organs would be the creation of organ donation markets in the United States, Slate suggests, before undermining that proposal by calling for a presumed consent rule. This would mean that recipients of driver's licenses would be presumed to consent to organ donation unless they state otherwise. If you want a win-win-win opportunity for patriots, think GiveMeLibertyFund.com. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's WorldAffairsBrief.com. For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to LibertyNewsDaily.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
So I painted a picture of what I think needs to be done to help Donald Trump with solutions. We've got to put tariffs at the borders for countries that are hostile to the free principles that make America great. That way, we take the taxes off the American people. We need to put a free association in place and deregulate to the point where there's a level playing field and the honoring of contracts. We need to let the free market work. If we get those things done, we've got the greatest recipe for success that we've seen in our whole lifetimes, Patrick Simmons.
Yeah, I think that would be a good recipe for success. And, you know, I think there's one more aspect of it. Donald Trump, one of the things he's talked about pretty consistently throughout this campaign is infrastructure spending. And I think if he's going to do that, and he seems to indicate that's a priority of his, he's got to first reform how these government contracts get done. So many of them right now, and of course the Obama Department of Labor and Obama executive orders have made this even worse, but they are essentially rigged so that only unionized companies and organized labor can get those contracts. There's a whole host of ways they do that. They use prevailing wage that basically doesn't, you know, excludes private non-unionized companies. They have project labor agreement requirements that basically say you have to have a union contract in order to get this contract from the government. And if we're gonna spend as much taxpayer dollars as he's saying on infrastructure, you know, that's something he's campaigned on. If he wants to do that, that's certainly his prerogative. We need to first, or as that kind of a program is embarked upon, eliminate the ways that those bidding and contract systems are basically rigged against the, 90%+ of American workers that don't join unions and have chosen not to join organized labor.
In other words, the days of pulling the lever in favor of unions at the expense of the rest of us are gone. Let people compete, let people honor contracts, let people bid for things, and let's see who really wins, and let the people gravitate towards success.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, he's talked about getting a better deal for the American people, for the American taxpayer. This would be a great example of how he could do that, how he could really... To the extent he spends money on infrastructure, make sure that all that money actually goes to infrastructure, doesn't just get siphoned off to unions and union officials who are then going to turn that money around and spend it on politics, buy influence, often counter to the very workers who they take that money from. You know, it's been a real problem, and it's been one that obviously we've seen it in the Obama years. We saw it during the Clinton years in the 90s. Some of the things that the Bush administration did, you know, that Obama undid, made things better, but we didn't see a fundamental reform. And if Donald Trump can do that, it would be a major step towards showing that this is really something different. This is about, you know, American jobs and not playing political favorites, but cutting through and getting a real good deal for taxpayers and treating workers of America fairly.
And it's very important that we reduce and or eliminate our foreign aid manipulations around the world. We'd have plenty of money to bring back home and use wisely and carefully as we look to the private sector for solutions. Kirk Crosby, speaking of Donald Trump's infrastructure and construction and everything else, there's an interesting Reuters headline, huh?
Well, that's right. The headline reads, U.S. construction spending hits more than a 10-year high in November. So in other words, it's been 10 years since it's been that high. You look at us, we're hitting 2016, so 10 years ago, 2006. You know, the big increases, I mean, surprisingly, the last line of the story says that the federal government construction spending surged, and not surprisingly, but there is even private sector, home building and things like that. And, you know, so much has to do, according to these guys. They say economists polled by Reuters had forecast construction spending rising, you know, a certain level, and it went even higher than they thought. So the bottom line is, you know, the people are, you know, they got a little hope, huh, Sam?
Amen to that. And somebody ought to do a research project, Patrick Simmons. You know, Donald says he brings in projects over and over and over under budget. Not only on time, but oftentimes early delivery. We ought to do a research study to find out when unions are involved, how often things go over and cost more, versus when there's no union and things cost less and come in on time and or before the deadline or before the expected time. There ought to be a research study that would kind of put that together to really put kind of reality check on things, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be good. I mean, you know, just if you want a sort of an example or a way to look at it, look at the federal government, of course, which is almost overwhelmingly unionized contracts when they're handing out contracts versus the private sector as a whole. You know, tell me which one you'd rather, you know, you think is more likely to come in under budget and on time. I think we all know from, you know, just so many disasters when it comes to government spending. The Big Dig is one of the most notorious ones. That's a, you know, federal and state-funded project up in Boston. They're basically putting their highways underground as a tunnel, and it, you know, it was supposed to cost, I forget the exact number, but maybe $1 billion, and ended up being like $10 billion by the time they were done, and it was 10 years overdue. You know, that's the kind of thing you get when you have rigged government contracts. But we know that without unions to interfere and force unionism, we see much better results. You were actually talking about housing. One of the statistics that I know is if you look at building of new houses. There have been it's been going at twice as quick a rate in right-to-work states as forced unionism states, and that's because A, workers are moving to these states. That's where the jobs are, and so, you know, you have people abandoning high-tax forced unionism states like California and coming to places like Texas and that type of place. And so that's why you've got you know, something like a 3% per thousand. Sort of new houses per 1,000 residents in right-to-work states, and the number in forced unionism states is like 1.4. So it's more than double And that's just another example of this right-to-work advantage. People are moving with their feet. They're coming to right-to-work states. The right-to-work states are gaining population while the forced union states are losing it. And so that's where the jobs are being created, and then that's where construction of houses and everything else that comes with the new jobs. So just another example of forced unionism being bad for workers and bad for the economy, and right to work succeeding.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's solutions everywhere. There's even data to back up the reality of which we speak. Patrick Simmons doing a great job, righttowork.org. Before we let you fly, I asked you a question that I don't think I gave you a chance to answer, which was, what can we the people do to ensure the success here? What should we be spending our time on and doing in your mind, Patrick?
Well, we kind of touched on it earlier. I think vigilance is really the most important thing right now. There's a lot of people in the federal government specifically. I mean, there were some anonymous quotes I saw leaked to kind of a left-leaning blog recently about bureaucrats inside the Department of Labor and the National Labor Relations Board saying, well, you know, Donald Trump has his agenda, but we have ours, and, you know, if he doesn't basically pay attention to us, we're going to be able to stop most of what he wants to do. And so keeping a close eye on these things, obviously the National Right to Work Foundation, National Right to Work Committee, you can come to our websites and get on our email list, and we'll help you focus on that, on the right to work issue. But I think in general, you have to keep a close eye because, you know, one election can be significant change, but it doesn't automatically mean that things change. And so paying close attention, contacting elected officials, who are the ones who have to be accountable to voters, and telling them when there's a problem is important. And, you know, whether it's right to work or any other issue, if they don't hear from the people, they're just going to be inclined to kind of go along with the Washington way. And that's, you know, as we know, is bad news. That's what a lot of people voted against in November. But there's a real sort of stickiness to that anti-freedom, big government, insider agenda. And if the American people aren't there to keep an eye on Washington, they'll backslide.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, insistence, persistence, letting our representatives know how we feel in a polite but dedicated manner is the great answer. Our greater numbers shall succeed. Patrick Simmons, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sam.
All right, back in seconds, Liberty Roundtable Live.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells. But as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, is this an uber bad news story, Kurt? I'm just saying.
Good question. Yeah, you know, you're talking about basically Uber having little tough times, and what's amazing to me is there's so much money in the Uber world, I guess you'd say. But they've reached a staggering $2.2 billion loss. That's according to Bloomberg. $2.2 billion, Sam. I mean, that's almost government numbers. They've left China, I guess, and the company's financial loss has remained what they say eye-popping, yeah, $2.2 billion. In the first 9 months of this year, the ride-hailing company lost that much money, $2.2 billion, according to a person familiar with the matter. I wonder if it's fake news. Anyway, in the third quarter, Uber lost more than $800 million, they say. You know, exactly how do they really lose money, Sam? I mean, I guess they just, I thought, basically, all theirs would be just cash rolling in from all the riders. But, you know, what are their costs? But anyway, at the same time, they say the company's revenue has continued to grow even after leaving the world's most populous country. That's China. Since they've left China, Uber generated about $3.76 billion in net revenue in the first 9 months of 2016. And they're on track to exceed $5.5 billion this year. It's a closely held company based in San Fran, and they've stayed mum about their financial performance even as its valuation has soared to $69 billion, making, they say, it more valuable on paper than General Motors and Twitter combined. Whoa. Uber's bookings, they say, the total combined value of the fares that riders pay were $5.4 billion in the third quarter, an increase from $5 billion in the second quarter and $3.8 billion in the first, according to the person.
Now,
I was going to ask you, Sam, what are their costs?
Well, let me explain this to you. The market for giving somebody a ride for pay, okay, and I'm going to use that kind of description or definition on purpose. The opportunity to give somebody a ride for pay has been so heavily regulated across the United States for so long, Kurt, and so manipulated and controlled for so long that it's an incredible nut to crack. I mean, you've got literally like in big cities, New York, Chicago, LA, whatever, you've got these quote endowments that a taxi cab or a taxi driver / company has to garner or get in order to give somebody a ride for pay. And to get one of those endowments costs oftentimes $1 million or more, Kurt. And you've only got a limited number of these endowments with all kinds of regulations of what prices you can charge. The prices are set by governments oftentimes. People can't, you know, pick you up and take your money to drive you somewhere for less. And there's a limited number of these, quote, endowments handed out to where it's so hardcore regulated. Uber has a business model of upsetting that whole apple cart, Kurt. That whole regulatory nightmare, that whole system of endowments where you got to get in line and wait for
you
one.
You would call this disruptive technology.
You're
right?
Darn right I would, for great reason. And boy, do we love it, sir. I mean, we absolutely dig it. Anyway, I bring this up to say, Kurt, can you imagine dealing with every government on the planet, literally? And I'm talking about even in foreign nations all over the world, every government on the planet, and upsetting that apple cart for every one of them? Do you realize how expensive that is?
That's a great point.
Holy moly, I'm surprised they're not backwards 10 times that, Kurt.
What's interesting to me about this story, if you look at it, you know, and you read the part that we've read, Bloomberg News' first main section, what do you get from it? Basically that Uber was in China and now they're out. Well, yeah,
and they're out
at
for
least,
exactly what I'm talking about. How much money did they spend before they got kicked out, Kurt, trying to stay in?
Well, one of the things, though, that you've got to get when you read way down in the story is they said on the 1st of August that it came to an agreement with somebody named Didi Chuxing to exit China.
That rhymes closely with cha-ching quite well, doesn't it?
Cha-ching, yeah. In exchange for 17.5% of the Chinese company. So there's a Chinese company that's basically doing the Uber thing there in China. And so as part of the deal, Didi invested $1 billion in Uber, and Uber got 17.5% of their company. Uber's third quarter financials don't include the business in China, which were part of the previous quarterly results. So, you know,
so
it's
see,
just
you take out a big chunk of that based on
that.
All these weird manipulations, Kurt, and see, it shows these massive losses. They just show you from one quarter it was included, the next quarter it's not, and why, and this deal with some government, you know, scenario by force. And I'm just telling you, you deal with every municipality in the world, and buddy, you're going to go broke.
Yeah.
However.
And I guess, you know, at least who knows what will happen. At least it's competition in that area.
Yeah. However,
almost
the
like
good
the
news
right
is.
To work.
Exactly like the right to work, Kurt. I mean, it's a different scenario, but it's the principles are the same for sure. And all I'm telling
and
you
we
is.
And we know people that have actually ridden in an Uber car.
Right? Yeah, like us. Now, I commend Uber for this, Kurt. I down these governments that have these. Look, if somebody in America wants to give somebody else a ride and get a pay for it, who says they can't do that, Kurt?
I mean,
they should be able to do that everywhere.
That kind of crazy idea.
Hey, I'm broke. I don't have a job. I don't know what to do. I'm going to become self-employed. I'm going to use the car that I bought when I had a job and thought I could make the payments, and now I don't want to renege on the payments, but I want to work, and I don't want to. I'm just going to use my car, and I'm going to transport people for free. It's Sam Bushman Driving Service, or whatever you call it. Now, why can't people do that? And the answer is because your government's out of control. That's why. But Uber has a plan to just upend that whole thing and say, bogus. And good on them. They're bringing new technology to the table to bear, greater features, greater service, greater opportunity, quicker, less expensive rides. I mean, the list just goes on
and on. It's almost like going from the days of the old AT&T phone service to, you know, what we have now.
Amen, and bring it on, sir. Yeah, telling you right now, what an opportunity. What an incredible, incredible opportunity. So they're acting like Uber losses are so tremendous, but they're not documenting why the losses. And they're not documenting, you're right, there's a lot of money brought into Uber, and there's a lot of money being paid for people who want rides and who want to circumvent the current system set up for taxi cabs and all these groups that want to control, you know, your travel. But the reality is, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of money brought to bear. That's why they're worth more on paper than almost any other company, because everybody knows that potential is gargantuan. And if they could just get the government regulations tamped down, out of the way, under control, just imagine how profitable Uber would really be, Kurt. It's beyond imagination, and they know it. And they're trying to shut it down.
And they've even got some competition, too. What is it?
Good,
Lyft,
yeah.
If I remember right. And
that's great, by the way.
Yeah. You know, I mean, all that does is just make it better for everybody.
Yeah, we ought to create Patriot Rides and compete, too. All right, 13,000 troops... You heard me. 13,000 troops and Kurt Crosby will be in support of at the inauguration for Donald Trump, but the 13,000 troops will be providing security. The goal is to make sure that we have a peaceful transition of power, writes Jonah Bennett. Neither guardsmen nor active duty personnel will be armed, but they will have the power to make arrests.
Wait a minute. So they're going to have... They're disarming the troops is what's going to happen. It's kind of like that military base. there in Texas where the guy went nuts and starts shooting the army guys. And, well, none of them could shoot back because they had to be disarmed on base.
Yes.
You know.
It's nuts on parade. It's crazy.
It's nuts. Yeah.
However, there is a little bit of a concern to say, hey, why should we use all these troops? The problem is Posse Comitatus and other guidelines say, you know what, Kurt, you can't arm the government or arm the troops or active duty personnel and use them with regards to the American people. That's where the rub is. There's a clear answer to this, though, Kurt. You got that, or you want me to get this one?
Well, I mean, as far as I can see, the answer would be, I mean, these guys are just there to participate, right? They're not there to, like,
they're there to keep
make
the peace.
People to, yeah, and to disarm them puts them at a,
it's nuts.
I guess you could say, it's just dangerous.
But I agree with the idea that we don't want to use government-armed, you know, troops that could be eventually used against the people. Here's the answer.
It is in Washington, D.C., though.
Correct.
Sam, isn't that where the federal government's supposed to?
That's right, and we would support
be in
that.
In charge of
in
things?
Addition to that, though, Kurt, they could use private contractors. They could get 13,000 veterans and people who, you know, are off-duty police officers and security personnel. They could get 13,000 private sector people and provide some incredible jobs, probably for a whole lot less money, and not even consider using the troops for this job. I think it'd be a phenomenal answer to all the problems.
Well, the Rolling Thunder guys might just roll on there and thunder in and make sure things are safe, as well as our buddies like Oath Keepers and others. There's plenty of, you know, guys that could keep things, I guess you could say, cool.
And your point so well taken. There's so many options, folks. It defies understanding. There are answers everywhere. We believe in opportunity. And we believe necessity is the mother of invention. And we believe there are answers to all these issues. Thank you so much for being alongside for the ride. Hopefully it was educational and entertaining. Hopefully the Trump surrogates and others that are listening will mirror our ideas and solutions to Donald and his team. And hopefully we can absolutely restore the Republic and the traditions of our founding fathers. Make America great again, if you will. Liberty Roundtable Live, ladies and gentlemen. LibertyRoundtable.com, LibertyNewsRadio.com, LibertyNewsDaily.com. Please donate liberally and get involved in the solutions. We the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, can and will restore America. This nation shall endure.